NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's been a frustrating 5 months for many New Hampshire farmers. Congress was supposed to pass a new farm bill by September of last year, but with all the fiscal cliff fights, they never got to it. And so farm policy was set aside till September of this year. That means more uncertainty for farmers about what types of grants or assistance might be available, which makes it hard to plan. But while they wait for Congress to get its act together, New Hampshire producers are getting involved. They're traveling to Capitol Hill and letting lawmakers know what they're looking for in a new farm bill, including block grants for specialty crops like maple syrup or ornamental flowers, support for buy local campaigns, and help with the hefty rules surrounding organic certification, and finally, some kind of solution to the continued demise of New England dairy. Today in The Exchange, fretting over the farm bill. A panel of New Hampshire farmers joins us, and let's hear from you, too. If you make your living from the land, how much does federal policy matter in terms of how you run your operation? Does it matter a lot, a little, or not at all? And if you're not involved in farming, how important do you think it is that Congress support local farmers? Should that be part of our federal policy and federal budget or not? Give us a call, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, the address, exchange@nhpr.org. We have three guests in studio, Lorraine Merrill, New Hampshire Commissioner of Agriculture, Markets, and Food, also a longtime dairy farmer in Stratham. And Commissioner Merrill, nice to see you. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Also with us, Ray Connor, beginner farmer, program coordinator for the Northeast Organic Farming Association of New Hampshire, and a farmer herself in Pittsfield. And Ray, nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Also with us, Roger Noonan. He's president of the New England Farmers Union, also president of the New Hampshire Association of Conservation Districts, and a certified organic farmer in New Boston called Middle Branch Farm CSA. And Roger, good to meet you, too. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Laura. Thank you.
Well, and Commissioner Merrill, just want to start off with you, because we heard a lot on the news just this morning about yet another fiscal cliff, yet another threat of sequestration. We're said to be approaching, once again, the threat of across-the-board cuts. How does that affect your department, Commissioner Merrill, and by extension, New Hampshire agriculture?
Well, Laura, it does affect our department a great deal and other departments of New Hampshire state government, because much of our funding comes through federal dollars, through the U.S. Department of Agriculture funding. So these reductions could have significant impacts, and there's just so much uncertainty right now.
I think sometimes people forget that a lot of agencies in New Hampshire are funded in large measure by the federal government.
That is correct.
Yeah. So what, just roughly, what amount of funding do you get from the federal government?
In our case, it's a couple million, and it's a significant percentage of our total budget. There are many partnership cooperative agreements between the federal USDA and our Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food, areas including animal health programs, invasive species, emergency response, and disaster assistance programs. There are a number of things. There are also the research and education programs at our land-grant university system that are so crucial, as well as the farm bill programs that farmers in the state count on, including dairy conservation programs, the specialty crop block grants, and so forth.
Well, let's talk about that farm bill, or I should say the lack thereof, since that's what we're focusing on this hour. And to you first again, Commissioner Merrill, and then I'd like to hear from the others as well. What does it mean, Commissioner Merrill, that the farm bill got put off for a whole year? Is that a big deal for New Hampshire farmers, or is it a minor inconvenience?
Well, there was a whole lot of uncertainty and concern and maybe a momentary panic at the last minute, because
really,
we had no idea what was going to happen. We could have had nothing, and particularly in the dairy front, a zero safety net would have been really very serious for the state. But that 1 year, the extension that was put in place, while certainly far from perfect, at least covered the bases of the most important programs for New Hampshire farmers, those being dairy conservation and specialty crop block grant.
So we should say Congress said, look, we're too busy fighting fiscal cliffs. We're putting off the farm bill for now, and we're going to extend parts of it just to tide you guys over until the fall of this year.
Correct.
What do you think, Ray? What does this fatootling over the farm bill, if I could call it that, mean for you and the New Hampshire farmers that you deal with?
I deal with primarily beginner farmers, and I get funding through the Beginner Farmer and Rancher Development Program, as well as three other organizations in New Hampshire that are working with beginner farmers and refugee farmers. And that funding right now is not up for reauthorization. That program right now is on hiatus. And so a lot of the work being done to support training and education in New Hampshire for our smaller producers, right now there's like a lot of uncertainty as to whether those programs will continue and whether that training will be available for those producers. And a lot of the conservation programs that many of the small-scale beginner farmers that I know of are tapping into through NRCS and other organizations are right now also kind of coming into question whether that funding is going to be available and those programs will continue.
And NRCS is National Resources
Conservation
Soil...
Natural Resources Conservation Commission. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah, it's interesting. So you work with beginner farmers, meaning people, small farmers who are just getting into it, including refugees. You mentioned that. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, beginner farmers is actually a broad definition by the USDA. It's really 10 years and less. So we have a lot of farmers in New Hampshire that fall under that 10 years time farming. So it's not just new and aspiring and very beginner, but it's also some, you know, established farmers for 7 or 8 years who are still, you know, in training and still accessing the funds and the programs that are available to them.
And as we've heard from Commissioner Merrill before, farming is undergoing a bit of a renaissance here in New Hampshire. Lots of young people getting into the act and so forth. So those are the type of people that you work with.
Yes.
And that federal funding is highly in doubt.
Yes.
So how about you, Roger Noonan? What does this lack of a farm bill mean for you and the farmers that you know?
Well, we do have a farm bill now. We have an extended farm bill. So there is something. So in the conservation title, which Ray referred to with the NRCS, we do have funding continued in those programs through 2013 till October of 2013, I believe. And that is probably next to the MILC extension, which is critical to preserve our dairy farms in the state to help preserve them against low prices. The conservation title delivers the programs that farmers use to enhance soil and water quality. It also uses the high tunnels, which a lot of beginning farmers and a lot of established farmers have benefited from.
No, wait, what is that?
The seasonal high tunnels are an unheated greenhouse that
You
do extended season growing. The vegetable ranch partnered with the Concord Co-op, and they put one up cooperatively.
So it allows New Hampshire farmers to grow maybe year-round?
Maybe. It certainly allows them to extend the season on either side. And that helps meet the demand for our ever-increasing demand for local produce. More importantly, I think it's the soil and water conservation. You know, our working lands, our farms and working forests are what gives us, I think, the New Hampshire advantage. And if we don't maintain those working landscapes through good conservation, we will lose them to houses and strip malls. And while we need those, we also need our working landscapes. So.
Well, that feeds into the next question I wanted to ask all of you. But let me also invite our listeners to join our conversation. The number here on The Exchange for you to become part of our discussion is 1-800-892-6477. Today in The Exchange, we're talking about Congress's failure to pass a farm bill, the impact on New Hampshire agriculture. If you're a farmer yourself, how much does federal policy matter in the way you run your operations? Does it matter not at all? Does it matter a little? Does it matter a lot? Also, if you're not involved in farming, how important do you think it is that Congress support local farmers? Should this be part of our federal budget or not? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. So, Roger Noonan, back to you, but I want to hear from everybody. Some economists have made the case that farmers shouldn't get federal support, that other businesses sink or swim on their own. Why should farmers be any different? It's a big question. What do you think, Roger?
Well, it is a big question, Laura. And overall, federal farm programs have had two aims. One is to maintain a steady and reliable supply of food, and the other is to preserve our environment through conservation. If you recall Ken Burns' recent story on the Dust Bowl, that was unregulated farming run amok that caused an environmental catastrophe, probably the greatest the world has ever seen. So conservation programs do a lot to mitigate those kind of occurrences. So I think they are important. Do we have the best set of programs right now? That's for people in Congress to debate.
So a federal role, but maybe a different, better role? Is that what you're saying, Roger?
I think we have a lot of room for improvement, and I think the last farm bill that was passed out of the Senate and the House Agriculture Committee offered better solutions, removal of direct payments, which are probably the most onerous things people think of in the Farm Bill.
Here's an email that gets to this point as well, and I'll throw it to you, Commissioner Merrill. This is from Laura in Bartlett. She says, the Farm Bill negates free markets. The Farm Bill is a prime example of big government gone haywire. Abolish the Farm Bill. Let free markets do what they are supposed to do. Give the money back to the states for use for promoting healthy food systems and to curb climate change and disease rates. Again, that point of, you know, why does Congress get so involved in this?
Well, and that's an interesting point made by the emailer of shifting money to the states to promote those systems, which sounds exactly like what the federal system is trying to do. And I think it's important to realize that much of this money, I mean, the direct assistance, direct payments are subsidies in effect. Most of these other things are not subsidies. The conservation programs mentioned, the way the free market does not compensate farmers for the costs of environmental protection, conservation practices that really are what farmers want to do the right thing, to take care of the natural resources, and that I think our citizens, our neighbors want us to do. And so this is a way to help farmers with that additional cost that is just never compensated when they sell their vegetables or their milk or any other farm product.
What about the other aspects, some of which you talked about, Ray? You know, buy local campaigns, help for beginning farmers. Again, you know, nobody's trying to pick on buy local, but why does that deserve federal funding?
Well, one of the things I think about a lot when I think about beginner farmers is the lack of sort of training that is sort of available to first-generation farmers, folks who didn't grow up on the farm. And there's a huge resurgence of these folks who are coming to agriculture as a way of life from urban and suburban environments. And if we don't have training to train those folks, then we're going to have a serious decline in farmers in the next decade. The average age of the American farmer is in the upper 50s, and folks are having a really hard time with land transfer. Farmers want to sell their land to new farmers, and there isn't anybody to buy it. So I think farmer training programs are really crucial for that.
All right. We'll talk in a lot more detail after a very short break. We'll take your calls, too. Join us with your thoughts, questions, comments, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. We'll be back in a minute.
Good morning. It's 9:19, and more on threatening over the Farm Bill coming up on The Exchange. And at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, the link between access to guns and suicide. NHPR is more than our daily broadcast. Check out our website to listen back to a story you might have missed or only caught a part of. Find more information or related stories about something that interests you. Subscribe to podcasts, learn about special events. There's always something more at nhpr.org. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the NEEF Network organizations working with the New Hampshire Department of Education to increase the college aspirations of local students at iamcollegebound.org. And from Griponi Auto Group, featuring multiple lines of fuel-efficient, environmentally friendly cars at Griponi Auto Junction in Bow and online 24 hours a day at Griponi.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, New Hampshire and the Farm Bill, or as we're hearing, the lack of a Farm Bill, as Congress put off work on this measure till much later this year. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. Whether you work on the land or not, we want your questions and comments about federal farm policy and its impacts here in the Granite State. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And before we go to our listeners, Roger Noonan, you also wanted to jump in on the email comment that I read before the break, saying that, you know, the Farm Bill is a prime example of big government gone haywire. Let the free market take over.
Yes, Laura. The emailer said, you know, they send it back to the states. And in several programs, which Lorraine alluded to in the conservation title, it does go back to the states. And furthermore, it goes down to the county level, where our soil and water conservation districts work with other partners, farmer groups, producers, environmental groups and whatnot, and they form local work groups and they determine what the local resource concerns are within that community. And then they go to the State Conservation Committee where a resource plan is devised, and then working with NRCS, the federal dollars, the programs are allocated to meet those resource concerns. And it's a very valuable program for the state of New Hampshire where, you know, given that it preserves our environment, which tourism being our number one industry, a good and clean environment is very important to that. And in the specialty crop block grants, which goes so much towards promotion of agriculture, that again comes down through this through the state. And then the state makes those allocations.
What about the broader point that she makes, though? Again, you know, for example, there's a little bit of money in the last Farm Bill, and I don't think it's been renewed in this extension, for Buy Local campaigns, Roger. We hear that Buy Local is big, that people are really getting into it at the grocery store, at CSAs like the one you participate in. So if it's so popular with folks, why does it need federal support?
Well, in the overall federal Farm Bill budget, the dollars that are allocated to there are probably in the fifth or sixth, you know, decimal place after
.0000
compared to what, say, Texas, which is the number one state for direct payments, which is in the hundreds, if not billions of dollars annually. So it's a fairly small pile. So if you want to talk about government choosing winners and losers, they've chosen New England as the loser for a long time. So.
Well, let's hopefully we'll hear from some New England farmers this hour. Let's go to our listeners now. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Robert's waiting in Pittsfield. Hi, Robert. You're on the Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call. Hi,
sure.
Ray.
Hi there.
I had a comment about the Farm Bill being a potential battleground between large farm interests and small farmers because they're interests aren't always the same. It seems like the large farmers have multi-million-dollar lobbying interests, and they're going to get the things that they need. But small farmers, I feel, need to reach out to the representatives and make sure that their interests are known. I'm a very small farmer here, and I see that like things like record keeping and tracking of animals and livestock and tracking of produce can be very, very difficult for small farmers, especially when they have a multitude of different products that they produce, as opposed to a large farmer who might have one commodity crop
right.
they grow.
Right. That's a huge complaint, isn't it, Robert, about the Farm Bill, that it favors the big guys over the little guys, and most New England farmers are little guys.
Right.
What do you think, Commissioner Merrill? I want to hear from all of you on this, but go ahead, Commissioner Merrill.
Well, Robert's right about some of the conflicts around the Farm Bill that happens every cycle. We have the large versus small. We have different types of farmers, different commodity groups, different regions of the country. I mean, there are just so many interests competing. And let's not forget that 80% of the Farm Bill is nutrition programs, such as the supplemental
Nutrition assistance program. Food stamps, people used to call it.
So all of these competing interests, and that's what plays out over the course of, there was a Farm Bill constructed for 2012 that was passed by the Senate and also in a bipartisan effort of the House Agriculture Committee, but was never brought to the House so we didn't get that bill. And now we have an extension for a year, and they are back to square one, basically, and we don't know. So all of these competing interests will continue to play out.
How do you get your voice heard then, Commissioner Merrill? I mean, you know, you're representing small farmers like Ray, like Roger. How do you even begin to be heard in the face of, you know, Archer Daniels Midland, for example?
Well,
I mean, huge agribusiness.
It takes, I think, increasingly the Northeast region has been working together. The states of the Northeast region have realized we can strengthen our voices. We do have more representation in terms of the numbers of representatives in the House, and it's a very exciting development. For the first time since the 1970s, New Hampshire has our District 2 Congresswoman Annie Custer on the House Agriculture Committee. And I met with her. I was down in Washington a week or so ago, and she's excited about the prospect and what it means for New Hampshire.
Is it that important to have a member on the committee to have your voice heard in a final bill?
It is.
Really?
It absolutely is. And for many years, New England had zero members on that. We were lucky if we got one or two members from the whole Northeast region. It would always be someone from New York or Pennsylvania on that committee. And now we have several from New England. I think it's an indication of the resurgence of agriculture in the region and that people recognize its importance.
Yeah, it's interesting. What do you think, Ray? Same question that comes from our caller. And Robert, thanks a lot. This idea of a struggle between the big guys and the little guys.
Yeah, one thing that I really resonated with in Robert's comment was the how do we get our voices heard as really small scale, middle-sized, small size farms. And I think jumping off of Lorraine's comment, really organizing ourselves and being involved and invested in policy at the local level, the state level, really talking with Representative Custer, writing to her, working with organizations like New England Farmers Union, with the NOFAs, with other, you know, agriculturally related organizations to sign on to letters with them, to make phone calls with them, to really just like put that like grassroots support in place. I think that's how our small scale farmers can really have their voices heard, by like aggregating that voice and working with organizations that are doing policy work in Washington or in state.
Yeah, and still, it's time consuming, and yeah, you're probably busy getting ready for the spring and setting up your CSA, Roger, and so forth.
Yes, yes, Laura, it is time-consuming. But back to Robert's point, the 2008 Farm Bill, you know, we've talked about the resurgence in agriculture in New England, New Hampshire in particular. The 2008 Farm Bill implemented a lot of programs, especially crop block grants, some of these other organic initiative and some other programs that have helped foster that growth. So it didn't just happen out of, you know, all of a sudden consumer demand. Consumer demand needed to be met by capacity, and the Farm Bill provided that capacity for the farmers to expand. We have the Senate version of the bill. We certainly didn't come out as well as corn or soybean growers, but we did a lot better than we did in the last bill, and we would have done a lot better than we did in the extension. We have a lot of programs that are essentially orphaned in this extension. Ray spoke to the beginning farmer rancher development. Value-added producer grant is a grant that's been used by Poverty Lane Orchards, Farnham Hill Ciders, Miles Smith Farm. It's an important program. It's a cost-sharing program, or a 50% match, I should say, that allows these farm businesses to scale up to meet this increasing demand.
All right, let's take another call. Thanks a lot for that one, Robert. Lots of discussion around that question. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Ray is up next from Gilmanton Ironworks. Hi, Ray. You're on the Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Laura.
Morning.
I was calling in. I've been listening to your show. It's a really good show. I've been a farmer now for a little over 5 years. We basically have about 500-something laying hens. And, you know, we sell eggs and stuff to, like, the Concord Co-op and other specialty small grocery stores. Now, one of your guests was talking about, as far as, you know, big government loans, big farms versus the small producer. And the one thing the problems that we've run into in the past is, you know, like I said, we're beginning farmers and you know, coming up with the money to get started. I mean, it's very expensive to buy land, to buy the equipment you need. And I think what the government could do is take some of that, you know, money that's going to these big farms, these direct payments, and use that as either block grants with the states and you know, to basically help beginning farmers, you know, to buy land, purchase tractors and other equipment like that.
So more frustration, Ray, am I hearing from you that the big guys get so much of a subsidy?
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, it seems like there's going to be some changes, but, you know, to me, that's the biggest thing, you know, my wife and I have talked about in the last few years. It's just, it's so expensive to you know, to do something like this. Like I said, I'm a first-time, you know, first-generation farmer, I guess you could call me. And, you know, it's very expensive to get, you know, to get into the business. And I've had to borrow money from the private sector, you know, and stuff like that.
You know, but, can I ask you a quick question, Ray? And don't take this the wrong way, all right? I'm just trying to present this to you. Anybody starting a new business, whether it's a tech company or a pizza shop or, you know, whatever, struggles to find the funding, struggles to make it work in the beginning.
Absolutely.
So why should a farmer get special help with that?
Well, I don't think farmers should get any special help, but I think that, you know, if the government is so concerned about, you know, having food available for, you know, for the U.S. population, I mean, that's one way that they could do that. If they're going to do anything with the money, or, you know, whether or not they're just going to cut it out completely, you know, the loans and stuff like that. But I agree with you there. A lot of large corporations and stuff like that, they, you know, like oil and stuff like that, they get, you know, government welfare, you know, corporate welfare or anything like that. So, I mean, obviously the bigger players are getting money as well, but us little guys, we're getting nothing.
Yeah, and Ray, Commissioner Merrill is nodding, and she's in full agreement with you. Go ahead, Commissioner Merrill. Thanks for calling, Ray.
Ray has identified, you know, the number one barrier to for anybody involved in agriculture in New Hampshire and New England, and that is the high cost of land as well as other inputs. And it's very, very difficult for agriculture, the prices that farmers receive for their products, to compete with the competing uses of land in New Hampshire. I mean,
like
real estates
malls
are just exactly
whatever.
So, so he's absolutely right about the challenge. There are a couple of federal programs that are assisting with this. One is the USDA Farm Service Agency loan program, which provides low interest loans for purchasing farms, and they have a special program, special rates for beginner farmers.
Just like the SBA helps small businesses.
Exactly. And then in the NRCS, USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service, one of the key conservation programs for New Hampshire is the Farm and Ranch Land Protection Program, which pays for part of the cost of putting permanent agricultural conservation easement on lands, which reduces the value to the non-development value, which makes it more affordable for farmers to purchase or to change generations in existing farm families.
Roger touched on that earlier, talking about, you know, farmers kind of in a way getting paid to keep the land open for everyone's enjoyment and for the overall environmental benefits. Did you want to jump in too, Ray? You look like you want to jump in there.
Well, yeah, I was shaking my head a lot at the caller as well, and Lorraine kind of summed that up beautifully. I mean, just one thing I think about when it comes to agriculture that's a little different from a smaller, you know, average small business is that you need such a large land base often, and that large land base costs a lot of money because of development pressures in New England. So, yeah, and then also the FSA has a new microloan program that they just introduced that helps with that capital investment income, and that was really a breath of fresh air for a lot of new farmers that they can access now capital funding for capital investments at really reduced rates as well.
Roger?
Well, there's also in farm finance, there's also the Farm Credit System, which is a federally mandated, I'm not quite sure what the correct term is, but it's a federal spinoff.
It's a cooperative.
A cooperative that has a mandate to fund farmers.
All right. Well, Ray, thank you for joining us. And again, the number for your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477. As we look at the lack of a farm bill this year, we'd like to hear from you. If you're a farmer, how much does this matter in terms of what you do, how you run your operation? Does it matter a lot? Does it matter a little? If you're not involved in farming, how important do you think it is that Congress and the President support local farms through the federal budget? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And to New London next, where John is waiting. Hi, John. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to suggest that federal support for small farmers is a necessary and proper thing for several reasons. First of all, it's a matter of preserving the family farm, and the cohesion of rural communities arises out of that. The second point is that large-scale corporate farming is notoriously wasteful of topsoil and water. The third point I'd like to make is that most of our food comes huge distances from source to market. So as Bill McKibben has said, most of our food is marinated in oil, and that has ominous implications for global warming. So there are several compelling reasons why small farmers should get some backing from the federal government
okay. In
any form that it can take.
John, thanks a lot for calling in. Roger Noonan, probably words to your heart.
The preservation of the family farm is the key mission of the New England Farmers Union and the National Farmers Union. And there are big family farms and there are very small family farms. You know, in New Hampshire, I think our largest farm is the Forbes Family Dairy Farm, which is still at its core a family operation, and down to small farms like Ray and her partner's small operation, or my own, which is a very small operation by standards anywhere else in the country. Lorraine alluded to the FRPP, which has done a lot, I think, to maintain.
And can I think you say what that is?
The Farm and Ranch Protection Program.
I know there's a lot of programs out there.
There's a lot of acronyms in this game, that's for sure. But in even more so, I think what's preserved family farms in New Hampshire is our current use laws. I think those have gone a long way to ensuring that the agricultural base can maintain maintain its open space character. So.
Well, and you mentioned the magic word, dairy, and we haven't talked about that yet. And so, Lorraine Merrill, I'm going to turn to you, not only you, Commissioner of Agriculture, but a longtime dairy farmer yourself. From what I've read, dairy didn't fare too badly in this holdover status of the Farm Bill. What's going on in as untechnical a way as you can do? I know this gets very technical.
Well, the MILC, the Milk Income Loss Contract Program, was extended through this interim period at a level that it was paying out before September 1st of 2012, which was critical because there was a change under the past Farm Bill that just changed it in September, rendering it ineffective, which was sort of a money game that they had played when they wrote that bill. So we were relieved that it was extended at that level. There will be payments starting with February milk to farmers in New Hampshire. Last year, that MILC program paid out $1.3 million to New Hampshire dairy farmers. Over the 10-year history of the program, it was a $10.7 million total. So it's not insignificant. It's a safety net program that only kicks in when the milk price drops below a certain level and there's a factor for high feed costs, which is what's causing all the trouble right now, is that grain costs are so astronomical.
And I know you and I have talked about this before. So just to make sure I understand right, it's not a source of constant continuing support.
Correct.
It's a source of support when the price goes too low and your input costs get too high.
That's correct. Now, the intention of the Farm Bill that was written for 2012 was to do away with that program, eliminate it, and have a different dairy security program, which involves a combination of basically a margin insurance that would make that kind of payments when the price of milk and the price of feed result in that very low or loss of money, with a production management factor where people would need to reduce their milk production when milk prices were going low, and to trigger that, which theoretically would hold the prices from going so low, because it's always, as we've talked many times before, milk is such a perishable product, doesn't take much of a surplus or a shortage to cause these severe price swings. And now we have no idea what they're going to do, because dairy was the big hang-up for the Speaker of the House. It's a big part of why it didn't come for a vote.
Wow. All right. Well, politics and the Farm Bill, more after a short break.
This is NHPR, where support comes from you, our members, and from the New Hampshire Moose License Plate Program, thanking drivers for supporting the Granite State's natural, historical, and cultural heritage. Information online at mooseplate.com. And the Scott Lawson Companies, protecting your company's most valuable asset, your people, through workers' comp, wellness, and health and safety services. Healthierworkers.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
I'm Virginia Prescott. Discovering new ideas often means asking the right question.
What was the question?
That's the best question you can pull out of that stack.
How can I help you?
Word of mouth. Unexpected radio for the inquiring mind. Monday through Thursday at noon and again at 9 on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, Congress's failure to pass a farm bill and the impact on New Hampshire farmers. We're hearing more from a panel of people involved in farming here in the Granite State. And let's hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Once again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, before we go back to our listeners, just before the break, we were talking about dairy, how it fared under this farm bill extension. And Roger Noonan, you wanted to jump in there too. Go ahead.
Yeah, Laura, the point I want to make about the dairy farms in New Hampshire and in New England is they are the anchor agricultural businesses in our region. Absolutely. They control more agricultural land in the state than any other. They deliver more dollars in agricultural output in this state. And they're the ones keeping our tractor dealerships in business. We lose them. you know, my business and a lot of the small farmers, we're not going to keep an R.N. Johnson in business or any others. So they're important to our infrastructure.
So not just important to the individual dairy farmer or that person who may want to buy local milk, but a broader economic footprint.
They're a source of composted manure for many organic farms.
I hadn't thought about
that. That's an important product.
I know you want to jump in there too, Commissioner Merrill, and then back to our listeners.
Well, it just continues to be a real concern for New Hampshire. I think Roger has articulated that very nicely. But we, in this last year, we have actually lost more dairy farms. We've lost about 10 than we had in the last, you know, maybe 6 put together. I think that this continued uncertainty and series of severe bad milk price situations that a lot of the number of the farmers are just saying don't have the stomach to continue or just have become discouraged about the future. We keep looking for Congress to straighten out this dairy situation and improve it. And number of our states around us have really generous programs to help support their dairy farms. And New Hampshire created such a program back 6 years ago or so, but has never funded it.
Well, so a bad decade for dairy farmers, and last year particularly was the worst, it sounds
like. Well, I think it was not that it was the most severe in prices, but I think that people made those decisions that they just wasn't looking auspicious.
Let's take
another
call.
Getting older, retiring.
This is Bill in Dover. Hi, Bill. You're on the Exchange. Go ahead.
Good morning, Laura.
Morning.
At the beginning of the program, in your warm-up, you mentioned that many believe that the money that's spent for supporting agriculture by the federal government or even by the state should be eliminated, and that the free market should take over and the free market should determine.
That's a question that's out there. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. So what would the panel suspect would happen if, in a hypothetical situation, that should happen? What would happen to the price of food and what we pay for basic commodities?
It's a great question, actually. Do you want to go first on that, Ray? It's a speculative question, but let's just say, as our caller suggests, that all of a sudden there's no USDA at all, no more loan programs, no more subsidies, no more crop insurance. It's a great question. What does agriculture in America look like? And what does the price of food look like?
Just taking a stab at the dark. I'm not an
sure.
economist.
And Bill, thank you for the question.
Yeah. Thanks, Bill. I really think that a lot of folks would not get into agriculture. I think with food pressures to keep food prices so low, and what, you know, Lorraine was talking about earlier with how much the investment costs with like such low returns typically, especially without any assistance from state and federal government. I think that it would not be an attractive business to start. I also think that you'd see the types of farms that come to play, like not necessarily take into account conservation practices and things like that without that assistance. And so you might have food, but you might not know the impacts of that food on the environment, especially in New Hampshire.
So farming practices would veer towards more just practices that grew the most food possible without regard for water quality or quality and so forth.
Sure, yeah.
What do you think, Roger?
Well, I think it would lead to some boom and bust cycles in our production agricultural regions. I'm not sure that would translate into New Hampshire, but what we would see in New Hampshire is you'd go into a coffee shop and there probably wouldn't be a free packet of subsidized sugar on your table. And the price of your milk may be $9 a gallon 1 month, and 6 months later, maybe it's $2 a gallon.
Wow,
if there's any dairy farmers left in business at that point. So that's price stabilization is at the core principle behind these farm programs.
What do you think, Commissioner Merrill? It's an interesting point.
You know, people have speculated about this for years, and including farmers sometimes who can be very frustrated with government involvement in their business. But the uncertainties would just be huge. When you go back historically, before these government programs were brought in, it was a free-for-all, and farmers tended to be the ones who suffered because there are many small businesses selling oftentimes perishable products to larger buyers that can have many more choices as to where to go. And so whether farmers would benefit as well as some people suspect, already we're importing tremendous amounts of our food because it can be sometimes brought in more cheaply from elsewhere. So that would many uncertainties.
All right, let's take another call. Thank you for that one. This is Gary in Concord. Hi, Gary, you're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to bring up what I think is kind of important, and that would be the honeybee. Many apiaries are suffering, especially with the colony collapse disorder that's been going on, and bees pollinate about a third of what we eat, and I think that's a really important thing to include in the Farm Bill. And I'll listen to the discussion off air.
And are you a bee farmer, Gary?
I have a couple of hives. Currently, I have no bees. They passed away. Been a rough winter. So, but I'm looking forward to getting some more bees. And it's just a hobby for me. But it's really important that the apiaries that pollinate so much of our food get some help as well.
Wow. Yeah, you know, Commissioner Merrill, it's a point I had not thought of, and I appreciate the call.
It is a very important point. Honeybees are crucial to our pollination of our fruits and vegetables, and as well as making all that wonderful honey. We do have the State Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food does have an apiary program, a voluntary program that our inspectors will go and inspect hives and assist the owners with what kinds of problems may or may not be there to try and promote health of the honeybees.
Do you have any thoughts on this, Roger? You've been in the business for a while.
Well, yeah, honeybees are very important to my operation, as they are to most vegetable and fruit farmers. There may be specialty crop block grants available to assist. So if the honeybee, an association of honeybee growers, producers got together, they could probably put in for a grant to find ways to mitigate the issues. NRCS also has initiated a lot of work in native pollinators, so planting grasses and forbs that will enhance the habitat for native pollinators.
Again, our number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Gary, thanks for that one. 1-800-892-6477. And let's go next to Hopkinton. And Annie is calling in. And I'm wondering if this is Congresswoman Ann McLean Custer. Am I right?
Yes. Good morning, Laura. And good morning, Lorraine. And Roger,
good morning.
This is Congresswoman Annie Custer calling in. I just want to say it's a wonderful show. And when you're considering how to communicate with Congress, this is a great way to do it. So, but I just wanted to comment again of how excited I am to be serving on the House Agriculture Committee from New Hampshire and to be supporting New Hampshire farmers, but also healthy eating and protecting our landscape. We also have jurisdiction over timber and the national forests and renewable energy. So it's a number of important programs that will benefit the quality of life we have right here in New Hampshire.
You know, Congressman Custer, it is unusual. I think Commissioner Merrill said at the beginning of the hour that New Hampshire hasn't representation on the Agriculture Committee for, you know, four decades or five decades. Is this something you really wanted, or was it just given to you? Because with all due respect to my wonderful panel, agriculture doesn't get a lot of play as a major New Hampshire industry.
Well, what's interesting is that the committee has such broad jurisdiction. I think it's often underestimated. It is a committee that I asked to serve on. I've had experience with land preservation and preserving farms around the Concord area, Diamond Hill Farm and Bohannon Farm. And it's important, I believe, in terms of quality of life, but also in terms of raising healthy families. I think more and more people want to know where their food is coming from, want to know that they're making healthy decisions about their well-being. And so I felt that it was important both to the economy in New Hampshire, but also the quality of life that we have here.
Okay. Well, Congresswoman Custer, good of you to call in. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, and thanks for doing the show, Laura. Take good care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. To Piermont next, Catherine's on the exchange. Hi, Catherine. Go ahead. You're on the air.
This is so timely. Just last week or so, I went down to the NCRS in Orford to talk with them about trying to pass on my lovely small farm to someone who would be interested in fruit farming and beekeeping.
Mm.
This is small acreage, but it is totally suitable for fruit farming, not dairy.
So,
it's
Catherine,
only 8.5 acres.
You want to pass this on to someone, a young farmer, yeah, and having a hard time finding someone?
Yes, the proper party. So I went to the people and offered to talk with them about my ideas. And this program is totally apropos. But this place is suitable for just that. And I didn't know that there was a program out there to provide funding or to encourage, and I found out that there is.
Well, Catherine, thank you for calling in. And this is something you talked about earlier, Ray. You know, young farmers wanting to get the land, kind of matching up older people who want the land to stay in farming and younger people who are trying to dip their toes in.
Yeah, there are a couple of organizations that are working on that. One of the organizations that's working on it was actually got a grant from the Beginner Farmer Rancher Development Program, and it's Land for Good, which is based in Keene. And they spend a lot of time working on land transfer, so talking to folks like Catherine who are interested in finding suitable new owners for her property. She wants to see it in fruit and farming. So they're working on connecting people through their land transfer program. And for me, NOFA New Hampshire is working with Land for Good and other conservation folks to put together land access events, which are ways to just connect those folks more casually so they can start meeting and talking to each other and then finding the resources.
How hard is it, Ray, to make an agreement that works for everyone? I mean, Catherine, clearly, you know, she needs to get some money from this. She mm-hmm. doesn't want to sell it for a dime. And yet the new farmer coming in who wants to do something small scale, he or she needs to have a low enough price so that it isn't prohibitive. I mean, how easy or hard is it to make a transaction that works for everybody?
Well, it's definitely not easy.
Yeah.
Just from my experience over the past year and working with folks in conservation and with Land for Good, it's actually super difficult. And there are programs like conservation easements and things like that, that individual regions can help farmers and landowners work on to, like Lorraine said earlier, to make the costs of that land affordable for beginner farmers, but also so that the landowners can get what they need out of it to retire or do, you know, next steps. So,
all right. Well, Catherine, good luck to you, and thanks for calling in. And let's take one more. This is Chris in Hooksett. Hi, Chris. You're on the Exchange. Welcome.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to comment on, we have a medium-sized farm here in Hooksett, and we find that our biggest struggle is labor and finding, if you don't want to hire or employ, you know, migrant workers, trying to find local workers to come to the farms and work is really hard. And I think there could be some programs put in place to match some of these young farmers that are looking to learn to farm with farmers like myself looking for help, where we could teach them to farm at maybe minimum wage or a little bit better.
Yeah, this is a big issue, isn't it, Chris? You don't want to get caught up in illegal immigration issues, but you need people who can work, and sometimes seasonally. You can't pay them year-round.
Correct.
Yeah, real interesting. And Ray is jumping up and down. So I'm going to go to her first, but I have a question for you too, Roger. Go ahead, Ray.
Yeah, I really like Chris. Hey, Chris. We've talked about this, and it is true. There's a lot of how do we get labor, the labor force to commit? How do we get really trained labor to come to our farms and work for 6, 8, 5 months?
Right, that's the thing. You're not offering them year-round employment.
Right, and it's a really huge problem and a really big question.
Sure.
In terms of getting that labor, I think most farmers are advertising in local newspapers and things like that. Organizations like the NOFAs are trying to offer connecting matching tools on the internet. So there are things like that available. But it is it's a big question and a big hurdle. There's also the fact that labor law is not fully understood by a lot of small and beginner and medium-sized farmers. And there's a lot of red tape to get through to actually hire labor legally and meet labor law standards.
So. Yeah, and as we talked earlier, small farmers are just so busy doing the day-to-day.
Oh,
how do you have time to dig into that?
Right.
What about, Roger, a program called Woofers? You've probably heard of this. The daughter of a neighbor of mine did it where she, I think it stands for Work on Organic Farm or something like
willing,
that. She did this in Italy.
Yeah, Willing Workers in Organic Farms.
Young people who've got a little more flexibility.
Yes. Yeah, it's a program that exists. We don't use it on our farm. We hire people to come and work, and we pay them a fair wage rather than using interns, which is, you know, it's a fine practice. A lot of farms do that. We choose to use hired hands. We also have engaged in the H2A, the guest worker program,
And these are visas for people to come in. It's
right.
In
it's very common on orchards and vegetable farms and more increasingly on dairy farms throughout the region. It's an important program, and it's with the immigration debate, there's going to be a lot of opportunities. But if I could, Laura, I'd like to circle back to what Annie Custer had said. There's a huge opportunity for our local foods movement to leverage some of these nutrition outcomes out of the nutrition title. We have over 150,000 people on food assistance in the state.
And again, 80% of the farm bill 80%
of the farm
food
bill.
Stamps.
80% of the farm bill is food stamps, WICs, and then a host of much smaller programs within the farm, school lunches, subsidized school lunches. There's a huge opportunity for our farms to expand into these markets, and a lot of the programs that were orphaned in the Farm Bill would provide access there. So it's a tremendous opportunity to keep local agricultural growing.
All right. Well, this has been real interesting. Roger Noonan, thank you very much for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Laura.
Roger Noonan, he is the president of the New England Farmers Union, president of the New Hampshire Association of Conservation Districts, and a certified organic farmer in New Boston called Middle Branch Farm CSA. Commissioner Merrill, very nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you, Laura.
Lorraine Merrill, New Hampshire Commissioner of Agriculture, Markets, and Food, and also a longtime dairy farmer in Stratham. And Ray Connor, it was good to meet you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Laura.
That's Ray Connor. She's a beginner farmer program coordinator for the Northeast Organic Farming Association of New Hampshire and a farmer herself in Pittsfield. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Faith Meixel. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.